going, guys?
Good, you?
Good. I know, thank you, Ian, for being us at such a late hour at where you are.
That's okay.
So first thing we want to talk about, obviously, is going to be 2012. That's what came out this weekend, and that's what we've been following for a while. The only really big viral campaign that we've been that's been going on. So I saw the movie. I did a review on the website, and then Ian saw it, and he did an alternative review on the website today. So I kind of just wanted to, you know, Ian, sum up real quick what you thought of the film.
I thought it was pretty good. Like I said in my review, wasn't a lot to think about. Just really sit down, watch, leave, and that's what I quite liked about it. We've not had a film like that this year, other than Transformers 2, which was pretty rubbish. So, yeah, I quite liked it. I would recommend someone to go see it.
Right. And you were someone
who... What did you think?
Right. You were someone who wasn't following the actual viral too much. It's definitely interesting to get that kind of perspective of it. Whereas I was someone who was definitely, especially during the last month or two, I was the lead point man on the viral. So... it was definitely interesting watching it from that point of view. There's a lot of connections, you know, to the viral. For people who are following it, you know, you do. They never really say the name IHC. Oh, you see that one billboard. They never say, you know, Aerobotics Space Corporation or whatever they're called. Yeah, they never really talk about the names or stuff. But you know that they're building it. You see the ships. You see that they talk about the map to China. That was one of the last things we got in the viral. That's actually in the movie. The whole pick, even the pickles thing, where Charlie Frost does he posts in a recipe for pickles, his grandma's pickles, and that's a big part of his character in the movie. So it's like these little things here and there that really, I mean, big parts were important, and also little parts are important. I thought that was really cool how it tied in. There's definitely some confusion on my part in terms of what happens when, because like when you guys, especially Scott, like you were doing a lot with the viral. Did it seem like it was taking place now or in 2012 or sometime in between?
It definitely had the feel of now. It didn't have any futuristic feel to it. You know, it was all just as is. So
that's something that was kind of confusing for me because in that viral, for the one of the last things that happened was that Professor Myers, who's the one running corruption theory, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he actually dies. In the viral, and so that his obituary actually shows up in the movie, which is cool. But okay. in the movie, when you see his obituary, when they're talking about it, it happened 2 months before it's when Jackson Curtis and Charlie Frost are talking. It's, mm-hmm. It takes place 2 months before that. But that part in the movie is set in 2012. So it's weird. Like, I'm not sure if that's supposed to be parts of it. Are the viral supposed to be now and parts are in the future? Like, I mean, it's a little confusing that way because right. it didn't. Nothing's in the viral made it seem like it's 2012. Everything is happening right now.
Right, and it's funny too because one of the, I think with some of the virals that we followed in the past, that has always been a question. Is it now? Is it when the movie's taking place? You know, or when is it? So
that's always tough. Yeah. And that was definitely something for this one, especially a movie that is specifically taking place in a future time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cloverfield was a little confusing what time it was. You know, even the year, there were people questioning what year it was. And then District 9 was actually the same thing. People were questioning what year it was. So there's a lot of questions about that. But I think with some of them, they kind of, you're assuming that the viral goes up until the events that take place in the movie.
Yeah, if you start breaking a viral down into exactly what time it is, you're looking too far into it and you've ruined it.
Yeah, it really does. It gets you into trouble because, like, it's really enjoyable to follow. And then once you realize, wait a minute, some of these times might not match up, then you start, it doesn't become fun anymore. Like, 2012 had a really intensive, really fun viral. But if you really, really look at it, you'll notice there might be some incongruities. And it's something where you can't do that because it just... If they have to worry about that stuff all the time, you'll never get anything done.
Right.
You know, and I think that's something overall, I mean, like, I know, Ian, you didn't really follow it that much, but for Scott, like, what did you think of the viral overall?
Originally, mm-hmm. it was slow.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I don't know, we complained whether, you know, I don't think Sony heard about it or anything, but. And then it just came out of nowhere, and it just overwhelmed, and website after website was popping up, and it was just tough to keep track of.
Yeah.
It, you know, I mean, the nice thing is, too, is that we complained a lot because of the experience, the 2012 experience, and Sony putting
right.
up every link on every page, but they kind of stopped doing that for a little bit, but then they threw, you know, the experience on every header of every mm-hmm. site and stuff. So it just, it got very overwhelming, and then I they ended it really good, to, you know, in my opinion. It was
right.
it was built up, it was built up, it was built up, and then, bam, it stopped. 2 days before the movie came out, so
right. No, I agree.
That was cool.
No, yeah, really. I mean, that was something that I found. I mean, you see that a lot with the virals, and we're starting to get a kind of feel for these like these full intensive virals that come out. We're starting to get a feel for. You see that a lot where you see kind of lull moments, or you see it kind of being slow. And that was with 2012, and it makes sense. I mean, you really want to do a lot of it in that month or two before the movie comes out.
Right.
And so they really, and it is. I mean, to the point where it was almost too much, but. It was definitely really intensive, really interesting story. I mean, this whole thing that one thing I didn't like is that they ended it 2 days before, as opposed to like the last day. You know, all the
right.
all the other virals I've seen, they ended the day of the movie. This actually ended it 2 days before.
Now, yeah, no, but it's yeah. I mean, it gets to
right.
you've got so, you know, this one I think built up really good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it got a little overwhelming, but after a while you look past it and you realize how cool it was. But then you've got sites that, you know, kind of go the complete opposite route. You know, we got hyped up for District 9.
Right.
Right at the beginning. I mean, they hyped it up.
Mm-hmm.
We got hyped. I mean, we personally didn't, but at Comic-Con got hyped up with, you know, Tron Legacy.
Right.
With all of, you know, that huge, you know, follow this, follow that viral. And then it's like, well, did you guys jump the gun a little too much? And then you look at the complete opposite of it, and 2012 was like nothing at the beginning, and then it just built up rapidly, which gets more attention. I don't know.
It makes more sense, too. I mean, that was something where with District 9 you had problems with the fact that the argument of do you do that? Do you build it up, let it go, then come back again? I mean, because then
right.
you have people, even like us, who are going like, well, what happened? Whereas with 2012, I mean, I don't think any of us really thought there was going to be much to it. We thought it was going to be pretty simple, or,
yep.
you know, we didn't realize, I mean, we saw the IHC thing, the lottery, and then we saw the Charlie Frost, and we thought, okay, that's probably going to be it. The whole narrative that they created with Soarin' and corruption theory and this whole thing, like, and the drop locations, I mean, I don't think any of us saw that coming. I mean,
no.
that, and it was pretty, I mean, you're just like, holy crap, they're really doing this, like, I mean, it was pretty impressive. And to go back to that whole 2012 experience, though, I actually was talking to one of our reps that we have from Sony or from the campaign, and they were mentioning that there were actually legitimate fears from people like who didn't know that this was part of like a movie, and so they actually happened. Yeah, and so people were actually even on the there was a fan page for the IHC. And there actually were people on there who were like, wait, is this real? Like, people, even with all that stuff on there, people still were scared. They didn't want to create a panic. So,
right. And just our shameless plug that we were in The Guardian.
Yeah, really.
There. You can check that out in our recognition page. But before that had happened, I wrote an article on one of the links from Charlie Frost or something like that on the main page. And this gentleman had posted this basic rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to write back to him, like, you do know that this is just fake. But,
right.
I mean, I'll find it, and, you know, we can make a note of it or something. But it was, like, this honest-to-God, you know,
I am
following, and it's just like, really, it's okay, it's a movie.
Yeah, I had one or two of those also on some of my articles. And it's really interesting to see that. Like, I just don't know if people just don't get it, or if it's some kind of, like, spam. I don't know. It's just really interesting. One of my issues that I had with the viral was that it actually gives away a lot of the plot of the film. You know, with some of the other movies that we've seen that have these really intensive viral campaigns, you know, it's mostly just giving you kind of background, but it's not really telling you a whole lot. It helps set up the film for you, but it doesn't do anything else. This actually gives away a big, the whole conspiracy thing, especially, is the part that really gives away a lot of the movie's plot, which I found kind of disappointing.
Well, I was just about to ask you, for the two of you, you know, Ian, you haven't followed the viral as much as Dan, and I haven't seen the movie, so it's a win-win. But the fact that they hyped up and they put a lot of the plot in there, because one of the things that we were upset about years ago is that nothing of the Cloverfield viral had to really do anything with the movie.
Good point.
So now you've got a viral that is giving away plot details. So Dan, for following the viral, mm-hmm. you obviously didn't really care too much because they gave it away.
Right.
But yet, Ian, did you get thrown off at all because did you feel like any part of the movie was lost because it wasn't explained to you because you didn't follow the viral?
No, and I said as much in my review as well. I didn't really use sort of token plot devices in it, but there wasn't really too much of a plot. Let's be honest, there wasn't too much of a plot to it,
sure.
Which is probably what I liked about it. And that's the thing, listening to you two talk about the viral, it's as if that's, if you really, really wanted a plot for a film, then that's where you would get it from. But from my viewpoint of not watching it, there wasn't any backstory at all. There wasn't any real plot. And that's what I think. Yeah, you don't really need it, but if you want it, it's there. You just have to go and look for it. And I think watching the first trailer, what I remember most of the first trailer, apart from the fact that I thought it looked really bad, was at the end. And there wasn't any website to accompany the film. It just says 2012, Google it. And instead of seeing something about the film, you'll just find all these inverted comma facts about what's going to happen.
And that's what led them into the whole. Definitely. So, no, I mean, that's one of the reasons, too, is that, you know, I think they had the whole NASA had to create a site and all these different things, because when you Googled 2012, you did not get the movie.
I think that after a while.
Sorry, I was going to say, you do shamelessly plug Read the Guardian article.
For me, I found it a little bit. Well, you're right. I mean, that's a very good point that Ian kind of brings up, is the idea that, you know, 2012, you're going in there for the special effects. You're not necessarily going in there for this, you know, really intensively great plot. You know, you're going in there for this just action-packed joyride. And if you want more plot, yeah, there's a really basic kind of conspiracy plot in the film that is pretty much completely given away by the viral. And, you know, if you really want to learn more about that, then you follow the viral. But for most people, they're just going for the ride. And I think that's exactly what, you know, with Ian, why he enjoyed it so much, because he had the ride. For me, it was a little bit like, you know, I looked at it the same way, but it's still kind of, for me, I mean, to kind of go on a tangent, where it was really about the special effects that kind of made me not like the film as much as I thought I would. I mean, the special effects were solid, they were good, but there was just so much that it kind of became mind-numbing. You know, to the point where it just didn't matter anymore. It's like, oh, there's another building being destroyed. There's more cracks in the ground. It's like, it kind of like, to me, it almost became mind-numbing. So it was hard. Yeah. It's hard to really, and it didn't feel like it was engulfing you. It felt like I'm still watching something on screen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, see, there's a comparison that, like, special effects-wise, because I read your review and you did say that it was overwhelming. I was watching Star Trek today. We'll get to that later on, I know, but the one thing I did notice about it that really is a direct sort of comparison was the special effects in Star Trek. What was really brilliant about the special effects of Star Trek is you didn't notice them.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense at all, like when they're in the shell hangar, for example,
mm-hmm.
it's just a shell hangar with shuttles flying about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really think twice about it, but special effects heavy, and that's what I liked about it. It was really subtle. It was really well done. 2012, there was just so many things happening. It was. You're right. It was really, really hard to keep up with.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like, it's so much part of the story with Star Trek that, you know, you're just thinking like that. This is just how things are. It's everything just seems so. It may just be part of that too. I mean, with 2012, every time something happens, everyone in the movie is like, "Oh my God, what's happening?" But in Star Trek, you know, it's just kind of how things are.
But you have, I mean, not to, you know, jump sides or anything like this, but you look at a film like Star Trek. You need special effects because it's in space.
Well, yeah.
You take a film like 2012, you need special effects because it's the end of the world. So it's like, there's another world, you know, another building toppling, but it's the end of the world. They're going to topple.
It's not a legitimate criticism. I think this is a movie where if they could have shown this in IMAX, I would have been in heaven. Because it really, like, even with all this stuff, I mean, especially the parts where they had people in, I mentioned this in my review, like they have like the CGI people in it. I actually thought those were probably one of the better scenes. We see people hanging from buildings and things like that because it brought, made it more real. Like otherwise, it's just yet another building, yet another ground cracking.
Yeah.
But when they put people in it, you kind of see the impact it really has. And part of, I mean, you know, and obviously you're gonna have the common Roland Emmerich problem, even Michael Bay-ish too, where you know, there's no way that the series of events that would have to occur for these guys to survive all that is just so unlikely. But that's just, you know, you have to kind of suspend, you know, belief there.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
But it's still fun to run. And it's just like, you know, looking back on the movie, after even after my review, I kind of go, well, actually, that was pretty cool, and that was pretty cool. And, you know, you kind of reminisce on it a little more better. But yeah. Especially when you come out there, you're just like, holy crap, that was a lot of stuff. But
you said you're going back tonight, right? So you'll just edit your review?
No, okay, my review. But I will go back tonight. Well, because when I do my viral review this week, I definitely, there's a lot of, like I said, you know, this is almost the exact opposite of Cloverfield, where, you know, a big part of the movie is the viral. And so I want to make sure that, you know, I see everything I need to see. And it's definitely interesting to see that kind of duality, to see, you know, with Cloverfield, barely any reference to the viral. Whereas in this one, it's almost like embedded in the film, which I think was really cool. But also, it could be an issue with the plot.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. So the Office, kind of go to TV. We'll do our one TV thing here before we go back to movies. The Office has, you know, they're always well known for doing a lot of viral. So they've had this new webisode out called Subtle Sexuality. I don't know if you guys have watched that at all.
I kind of just, you know, got myself. I don't follow the show that much, but I followed what we, you know, what we posted.
So, I mean, I thought it was hilarious. They did this whole thing where Aaron and Kelly create their own little girl group, and then they do a music video, and it's hilarious. And Ryan is in it, and then so is Ed Helms' character. I forget what his name is. And so it's really funny. And we actually did a contest for it on Friday, where you could win the CD that they from the song they played, and then also a T-shirt with the group's name. Because they have a website, subtlesexuality.com, I think. And so that's actually where they talk about what their appearances are going to be, and it's all like just like open mic and karaoke, and like one of them was like Aaron's apartment and things like that. It's just so funny. Ryan from there also has his own little blog for his photography, which he mentions in last week's episode, not this week's episode.
Has the wedding site done anything at all recently?
I actually haven't seen it. I think it was all pretty much to promote the
event. Yeah.
But it seems like they're just creating new stuff all the time. So,
well, it's just cool because there's not too many TV shows.
Yeah.
That have gone this extra step. You know, we've seen shows that we thought were going to do it.
Right.
Started to do it, and then
flash forward. Yeah, things like that.
Exactly. So.
Even V doing it a little bit, but not really.
V's was weak because V's was tied so hardcore into ABC that it was disgusting.
It wasn't even like a real viral. It was just like a little.
It was, it was just weak.
Yeah. Huh. But, you're right, though. There's not a lot of places that are doing it like on a consistent basis like this. And it actually is working because I hadn't even watched the show since, I think, the fourth season. Like, the beginning of the fourth season was when I stopped watching it. And I started watching the episodes because of this. So I've watched the last couple of episodes now because of the marriage thing and the wedding site and then this subtle, you know, the girl group and even Ryan's photography blog because I just wanted to see what episode that was in. Like, and so I started watching it, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is funny still. So it works for me. So it's obviously the good thing to go. And it helps that it's a show that's really established. So it's like, you know, they're not wasting their time on a show that's going to be canceled, which may be why they didn't do much for V, because there's a lot of talk about V not doing well. I think it dropped like 26% or something like that in its second week.
I mean, I've got people in, you know, my office and stuff like that that actually follow The Office and had no clue that these virals were going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they knew the band Subtle Sexuality, but they had no clue that there was an actual website. So it's
right.
It's almost, you kind of wonder how they get these sites out there. Are they ever going to let the public know by watching the show and shout out a website?
Yeah, I just went, but
yeah,
well, yeah, well, I just went, but So they always do it in How I Met Your Mother. You watch an episode of How I Met Your Mother, they talk about a website, and then you can go on, and it's there. Whereas, yeah, like sometimes like the V or whatever, it never really seems to be publicized. So how does anyone ever find out about it?
Right. And I know one of the things, too, is that Conan O'Brien was big on this, and he used to do all these websites, you know, the Manatee, whatever that was called. Sexwithamanatee.com. But whatever, and he made a mention, whether it's true or not, I have no idea because I never followed through with it, that if you were to mention a site on public television, you have to purchase that site. And that was how that website had came about. So it's like you kind of wonder, you know, if that's another form of viral. You just mention a website and then people go and check it out. But how is this ever going to get known to Office fans that there's a website for it? I mean, true Office fans might know.
Right. Well, I think with the subtle sexuality one, they had websites on NBC.com. So people who go to NBC.com to get more information on the show, they'll see the webisodes. Plus, I think the webisodes are pretty well known. I mean, they don't come out on a specific time or anything, but people know that I hope that they do. The people know that The Office has webisodes. For people who really like The Office, most people.
But a lot of people that don't, you know, they know that the webisodes exist if you continue to watch the show as soon as it ends, because Hero used to have, you know, with their webisodes, you'd watch the show and then a minute or two after. Go to NBC.com most people didn't. I didn't. I loved Heroes, and I wasn't going to go look on the internet for more videos for it. But so you know, it's almost like throwing in the show to get it known. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of it just, you know, just trying to give extra, you know, stuff for people who do kind of follow that stuff. The people who do, you know, like to take that extra step, and that's what it's really for. It's not for everyone necessarily. It's for people who like to take that extra step and look for that kind of thing. Because they realized that. I mean, because even if you thought about it, like, because they mentioned that in Flash Forward, there's an episode where there was a website for the Blue Hand group or whatever they're called. And so the site only – you could go to the – they actually mentioned the actual website, but when you go there, it just links it to ABC. But it's like, how many people are really going to do that, you know?
Right.
So there's a small percentage. But that percentage is enough to go – that's your key demographic is the people who really kind of follow through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, what they're looking for when they do that kind of stuff. Like, but something like Ryan's blog, his photography blog, I don't know how – if they hadn't sent me the information on it, I don't know how anybody would have found that because I watched the one episode that he mentions it. And all he mentions is his photography. He doesn't mention his website or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea how they promoted that. I mean, maybe it's something I didn't see, but, I mean, that's just – the only reason I knew about it is because NBC told me about it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like – it's tough sometimes. Now let's go back to movies. Avatar is one of the newer films that's coming out. Now that 2012 is over, we have to start looking for other stuff. So Avatar is coming out on the 18th of December. So they just did a South Park episode on Wednesday that was hilarious, where they actually kind of make fun of Avatar. It's not so much making fun of Avatar. It is a little bit, but it's more about making fun of like your Glenn Becks and your Bill O'Reillys. And they tie it in really well because Cartman becomes like a Bill O'Reilly kind of guy. And then because he's the morning announcer, but he totally changes it up to be how he wants it to be. And he tries to – he makes up this entire story about how he made himself live with the Smurfs because Wendy, the president, the school president, the class president, she hates Smurfs. That's what he tried to – try to employ, and so people were all mad at her because she hates Smurfs, but she doesn't, obviously. And so he made up the story where he went to live with the Smurfs, and then she came and destroyed it all so that they could have their Smurf berries or whatever. And it was just so funny. And then at the end, he realized she kind of turns it on him by saying that, you know, yeah, we did that, but then it's because you pretended to be one of them. You were actually working for us. And she totally turns it on him, and then, you know, it's pretty much the plot of Avatar. And so then he goes to see it at the end, and he's like, you know, God damn it, they stole my idea. it was just so funny, like, to see that the little bit on Avatar. It was mostly about, you know, mostly about Smurfs and Bill O'Reilly, but just to see them kind of tag that at the end there.
And I'm sure that once the whole Avatar clips came out, the Smurfs were the first thing on many people's minds, especially.
And on the other note, another thing that's been one of the big criticisms with the film is that it doesn't seem like it's an original story. So obviously there's elements of Smurfs in there, but another big movie that people have referred to it is Ferngully, which actually was released by 20th Century Fox, same guys releasing this movie. And so there was even a College Humor, which I don't remember if you ever actually posted that, but there was a College Humor video where they totally made fun of that. And then there was a lot of talk about it on the internet about how it's like Ferngully. And then so now just last week they released a trailer that's supposed to be this kind of family-friendly trailer. And I know Ian just watched it before the podcast. And it is just it's the same guy, I think, doing the voice as the old Ferngully trailer. And it really – I mean, if you hadn't thought about Ferngully before, you do now. Because it was just totally selling it like that. It's like, you know, what – enter a world and, like, you know, where imagination, blah, blah, blah. Like, they totally – it's just so weird because it's so different from the other trailers.
The first trailers, you know, first one or two, whatever that came out.
Mm-hmm.
First one, I wasn't thrilled with. The second one was cooler, you know, it just gives you a little bit of idea of the special effects and everything and the action that's involved in it. And then this one just shits on it. It was just horrible. It was too family friendly. It was, like you said, interworld and all this kind of stuff and families and love and go see it with the kids kind of stuff. And it just made $300 million seem like nothing.
Right. I mean, go ahead, Ian.
If I hadn't read your article and I just watched that, I honestly would have thought that someone would have made that up as a joke. Honestly, you know, someone's taken the Ferngully soundtrack and then just splicing bits of Avatar in it and then put an Avatar December 3
and even with the monsters, it was just, they made them look fun.
Yeah, and I get the point. And when I posted the article about it, I mentioned the fact that, you know, every trailer, the original, you know, kind of the footage you see in Avatar Day and then the trailer they originally had, and then some of the TV spots, they're going with a lot of different kind of feelings, you know. There's some that are more, you know, plot-driven. There's some that are more, it's an action movie. There's some where it's more, you know, they're trying to push different sides of the story, which I guess, you know, to a certain degree, it makes sense. You're trying to show people that it's not a one-dimensional film.
Right.
And you're trying to make money. This thing costs, like, what, $300 million? There's one estimate that said that with marketing and everything, it might cost up to half a billion.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And
you spent $300 million on this rig out in the new trailer. I think you can hear the main character go, wee!
Yeah, no, really. But the whole point is you want the broadest audience possible. And so they're going to have to do one. It's 3D and it's kind of animated, but they want to show that it's also kid-friendly. So they're, you know, the point of the trailer, obviously, was to try to broaden the audience because they need to make money on this film. Otherwise, they're screwed. But, it definitely kind of – it just strips the soul of the film. You know, and I've only seen the trailers, but I did see the 16-minute preview, the Avatar Day. And you kind of get a sense of the film, and it seems like it's deeper than that, obviously. It seems like, it has some elements that are very common that have been in other films, like Ferngully and such. But it is, you know, it seems like it has a good heart to it. It seems like it has a good soul to the film. And it just kind of strips all that in this trailer. And it's like, it's funny to watch because you're just like, are you really doing this? Like, people are going to totally rip on you for it. But they don't care. I mean, all that matters is that the kids see it. I'm sure it's running on Nickelodeon and stuff like that. And the kids probably go, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
In 3D.
In 3D, yes. We got to throw that in there.
Yeah, I keep saying it's in 3D. But I'm saying right now, man, I don't know if I can stand 3 hours of 3D.
No, 3D is just, to me, is useless. I haven't been impressed with 3D in a long time. But this could be different because it's not real. You know, it's digitized and all that stuff. So the 3D could be a little bit more involved. But,
yeah, we talked about this. Because
I heard the 3D in Christmas Carol was awesome. Just because of the fact that it wasn't real, you know, it was all animated and digitized, so the 3D was really cool. So this one could, you know, blow 3D out of the water.
Yeah. I don't know. I first of all, Christmas Carol does not look interesting to me. But the 3D definitely helps when it's not real, because that's something where they actually do in the Avatar Day trailer that they showed. I mean, there were some parts in 3D that were real and some parts that were the animated stuff. And the real stuff just looked like a Universal Studios ride. You know, like it looked really like junky. But then the stuff that was actually there was really good. You know, the stuff that's actually on the planet and everything. And yeah, it's things when one of the big problems with 3D is that when things move very fast, you don't see it very well. But it gets kind of blurry. But other than that, it does look pretty cool. It does give some good depth to it. But that's something that's going to be, you know, interesting to see if that really can hold up for 3 hours. I mean, I watched Toy Story 1 and 2 when they re-released it in 3D, and that was about 3 hours, but there was a break, and then that wasn't too bad. Granted, there wasn't as much stuff going on. There wasn't, like, tons of things jumping on the screen and, like, you know, helicopters flying and stuff like that.
Right.
But,
well, I mean, with animated 3D, you can put things where you want.
Right.
So something's a little blurry, it's, you know, easily fixed.
And again, you know, that movie, the Avatar Day was, God, when was that? That was a couple months ago. So I'm sure they've done a lot of improvements since then. I mean, I've heard that they've been working around the clock on that thing, so.
Which puts it over $500 million that they're working on it still.
Probably, yeah. That's just
good luck, James Cameron.
That's the idea that, I mean, it's, how is it going to make that much money back? I mean, that's going to be tough. But that's why they're doing these trailers. they need to get everyone. You know, next will do one for like, you know, pets. That's where I get them to come.
Adult night Avatar trailers.
There you go. You never know. You never know. I'm sure there's a sex scene somewhere, a 3D sex scene.
Oh.
Between the blue aliens.
Oh, God.
that's on the cutting room floor. It's on the DVD.
It's in Jane Cameron's private house.
There you go. Anyway, so moving on to more appropriate topics. District 9, we've had a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about some of the concept art that's come out in DVD details. One of the great things this week was the fact that we found out that they're releasing it a week early. And normally that's,
smart move.
Yeah, and normally that alone is nice. Oh, a week early. But what makes it so great is that they were originally releasing it on December 29th after Christmas. That's pretty dumb. And so now they're releasing it right before Christmas. I think that's the 22nd. So that's perfect. I mean, it's always nice to get it earlier, but at least they're putting it before Christmas.
You kind of wonder what made them go with the 29th originally.
Yeah. Especially
a film that big. You want it out
right
now.
I can't imagine any movie being released right after Christmas. Like, why? I mean, I don't care how big the movie was. Why would you completely destroy your marketing by releasing it right after Christmas? I mean, I can see, like I mentioned in my article even, the idea that maybe you're trying to, for people who get really crappy gifts, like, you know, some crappy, sweater or something like that they hate, they can go to Target and exchange it for a District 9, you know.
But you could have still done it whether it was a week, you know,
right,
before Christmas or the week after Christmas.
Right.
You're still going to do it. So what? I don't know.
There's no reasoning for it. So I think that they realized that. Either, I don't know if it was something that, you know, the uproar on the internet and us and fans of it, or if it was just something that kind of went, hey, wait a second, isn't Christmas sometime around there? I think at some point they just went, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, and so they changed it.
Yeah.
Which is
a good thing. It's a huge thing. I mean, that's only going to put, you know, I mean, even whether it was Christmas time or the week after Christmas, he's still going to make a ton of money off of DVD releases, but the fact that it's coming out now on the 22nd is
definitely
huge.
Yeah, I had to readjust my Christmas list for people to add that back on.
Did you knock off Inglourious Basterds for that one, though?
I never actually put it on there because I don't know. I mean, I've never actually bought a Quentin Tarantino movie. I like all of his movies, but
well, it's funny too because I don't think they've actually released the date for the Hangover DVD, have they?
I haven't seen one.
I haven't seen or heard anything, so it's like, you know, what goes through these people's heads when it's time to release a movie? So.
I don't buy a lot of comedies because, I mean, mostly the movies I buy are, like, special effects movies because it's just more interesting, I think. I mean,
obviously they got the more, you know, behind-the-scenes featurettes are a little bit better on a special effects film than,
right,
you know,
it's anything that's high concept I usually have or something that has to have rewatching abilities. Like, with comedies, they're a little hard to rewatch because, like, the jokes kind of go flat after a while. But speaking of... I'll kind of skip over. Speaking of DVDs, Paranormal Activity, they haven't announced the DVD yet, to my knowledge, but they have been doing, and I have to check to see if that actually is still going on.
No, it's not.
It's over now?
Yeah.
So they were doing something, and I got my name in there, where if you were kind of a thank you to the fans, if you had if you put your name in there on this website they had for it, you could actually have your name in the credits. At the very end of the credits, I imagine they're going to just have this big list of everyone who put their name in. You, of course, had to give them your basic information, like your birth date and all that stuff. But and so you get to be on their nice little list so they can distribute crap to you. But no, I think that's really cool. I mean, it's a little gimmicky, obviously, and I mean, but it's nice to show that they understand the importance of the fans.
Right, and I mean, that was cool, and it would have been cooler if you put down movie viral instead of your own name, but whatever.
Damn, that's smart.
Oh, yeah, see? Look at that. Kevin Smith did that at the end of Clerks 2.
Oh, yeah?
If you watch the ending of Clerks 2, he lists every single MySpace fan that he had at the time the movie came out. So, no, and that's cool. It's obviously something that's going to boost your sales. That's a brilliant move, on their part. So,
right. I think that's really cool. Because, we have an article from Nick on the site about, the viral campaigning for it. Not in the way that we usually cover viral campaigns,
yeah,
where you have, stories and stuff like that, but just the fact that it spread through word of mouth. Almost
huge.
Yeah.
They just hit 100 million.
Yep. And it's all because, the word of mouth thing is, where viral originally started from. And so that's exactly what they are doing here is the word of mouth. And it's just really cool to see to see that kind of impact. Usually the studios have to promote the movie, mm-hmm, and they have to, push it out there for everyone to enjoy it. But this is one where the people actually pushed it and demanded it to come into wide release.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And that's something that's going to be – we'll have to see if that happens for the next movie even, because maybe all the press that the director's gotten for this – we'll translate to his next film, Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have read anything about the actual the concept or the plot, but that's something where he's doing the exact same style, where it's going to be, found footage, but these people kind of they break into Area 51 and try to sneak around, try to find evidence of aliens.
Which could turn into probably just as much of a freaky film as, Paranormal Activity. It'd be.
Yeah.
Into that realm.
It's like a mix of Cloverfield and Paranormal, because there's monsters. Because apparently there are actual aliens there. So, and that'd be kind of cool to see what they do with that. I imagine that the popularity of Paranormal Activity probably makes it so that they don't have to worry about a wide release.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see if they try to do anything with that. The idea. I just personally love Area 51. That whole idea. It's really cool, so.
Yeah, no, that could throw a whole new thing, but, and it's cool, too. I forget who had posted the article, but my very first article was on a low-budget camera-style film called The Bukowski Tapes.
Oh, that's right.
And somebody had just posted an article. They interviewed the writer, one of the writers from The Bukowski Tapes, saying that hopefully Paranormal Activity's success will get his film finally released. Here we are 3 years later with no film. So hopefully that'll put that film out there for everybody to get to see, too. So
I remember you wrote that. And that was a really good article, and it made me really want to see the movie, but just kind of got snuffed out. I don't know.
It's going on. I want to say 3 years, but I could be wrong. It could be a little bit less. But so he's hoping that somebody will realize the importance of low-budget decent films and put that out there. So,
definitely. And then Oren Peli is the director of the Paranormal Activity and stuff like that. It's actually his first actual directing job and writing job too, because he wrote the movie as well. So it's kind of cool to see that, to see, because everyone's unknown in that movie. It's like the actors, the director. It's just it's amazing to see how that how that happens.
I heard my first bad review for that one the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Somebody that I work with said it was garbage.
Yeah, I had problems with the film, but I still liked it. Did you see it, Ian? Did they even release it?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't like it.
Really?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's really. Right. Honestly, I just... like, I thought the concept was great, you know, just put a camera in a room, freaky things are going to happen, and that was my problem, maybe that was my problem, because, you know, when they're sitting in bed or whatever, I'm not watching them, I'm watching the doorway, and I'm just waiting for something to happen, nothing ever happened, and I was so bored by the end of it, because I was just too busy looking at everywhere else in the frame. Because I thought that would have been clever, but so no, I didn't really love it. But
I had the same problem too. No, that's right. I had the same problem too. Where I mean, when they did have something happen, it was really small, and it was like you're sitting there. There's a lot of tension. Like you're just sitting there, all tense, waiting for something to happen, and then it's like a door moves or like a light turns on or something really simple. And you're right.
Yeah, and the thing for me, every time something did happen, brought your attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they brought my attention to exactly what was happening, it just made me realize how little actually happened in it.
I mean, that's why there's some people who really liked it, but some people really like that concept, you know, the whole tension and waiting for it. And then, like, there are people legitimately scared by that stuff, like the door moving or those footprints that you saw at one point. It's like, you know, to me, I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, like, okay, that's it. But, like, For some people, that really scared them. Like I think it's one of those things where everyone has their own, you know, interpretation of it.
Right, and it's true. You look at, you know, the door moving and the curtains blowing around. Well, that can happen to anybody. It's called wind.
Yeah.
So for that to happen, because I mean, no, seriously, you write something like that, the door moves, thousands of people yell and scream in a movie theater.
Yeah.
They go home. Guess what's probably going to happen?
Your door moves. Yeah.
Your door is going
to
move.
Happened to me tonight.
You live in a house and it's old and, you know, it happens. So, no, but that's a brilliant, you know, concept. It's not like, you know, oh, well, I knew it was going to happen kind of thing. You're going to run into people that know what happens because, you know, we live in older homes and there's creeks and, you know.
Everywhere, yes.
So it's, but at the same time, that's a brilliant move to just play off of people like that.
Right.
And Blair Witch with camping and stuff like that. Who the hell wants to go camping now after Blair Witch?
Right. And that's a big thing in horror films is you always want to attack people where they feel safe. Because in that way they never feel safe. And that's the same thing. Like I had the same thing, you know, after I watched the Paranormal Activity, you know, every time you heard a creak or every time you saw any little thing, you thought, oh God, it's a demon. you know, no matter how bad the film was, it was like, you still kind of thought that. But, yeah, I mean, I even had that tonight where I was sitting in my room. My door just kind of opened, and I realized it was my dog coming in. But it's just all creepy, though. But, that's the first thing you think of. As soon as I saw that door open, like, the first thing I thought of was the movie, and then I realized I just looked down. I was like, oh, it's my dog.
It's my dog, Cujo.
Yeah, there you go. That's even scarier. So another problem that's been going on, Alice in Wonderland, which is being directed by Tim Burton. They had a little Facebook kind of viral where they had, I think it was 9,000 likes for the picture. They will release another picture. And these are some pretty crazy pictures, which shouldn't surprise anybody because it's how Tim Burton works.
Right.
Have you guys looked at the pictures at all?
I've seen a couple of them that were a little off.
Yeah. He has such a unique style. It's just hard for me to kind of like wrap my head around what he does half the time. I mean, are you guys interested in seeing that at all?
No.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love Tim Burton. I'm looking forward to it.
Is that something where in England, I mean, the whole UK area, is Tim Burton big over there or not?
I don't think so, no. I just remember a lot. Maybe not recently, but a lot of his earlier work, I just remember it and just thought it was great, like Beetlejuice and the original Batman, not the original Batman, but, you know, the 1989 Batman, and even Nightmare Before Christmas. One of my friends watched that tonight, actually, for the first time ever, I think it was, and they were just saying on Twitter how great it was, and I think... Yeah, I just really like him because he just seems to do original stuff. He does have some imagination on him. So maybe that's the only thing I'm maybe worried about Alice in Wonderland is because he's already using a story that's in place. And I don't think he really did too well with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But
right.
See how it is.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing for me too. It's because I stopped liking him. I like Batman. I like Beetlejuice, then that was it. I didn't really care too much for Tim Burton. He's too odd. And I don't think much of that was really shown, except, you know, until he did the second Batman film and stuff like that. Nothing was really, really odd to me. Even Beetlejuice was normal to me.
Yeah, really.
And then he started to get into The Nightmare Before Christmas and Scissorhands and all these things that seemed just too odd. So I never really liked him outside of Batman and Beetlejuice. But this film is an odd story to begin with.
Right.
So he's probably just going to own it and get Academy Awards and all this kind of stuff. Cause
yeah,
it's a nutty story with a nutty director and ta-da.
Right. So I think a lot of people don't realize that, too, is that, you know, it's been really Disney-fied and everything, the whole Alice in Wonderland, but the actual original story is pretty intense. It's like it has a lot of weird stuff in there. And I think it's been so kind of Disney-fied and so acceptable, you know, to make it more of a children's story, I think, that it really was.
Well, Disney's obviously changed itself. I mean, Surrogates is not a Disney, you know, quote-unquote Disney family film, but they still put their name on it, so.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, Alice in Wonderland is classically Disney. Look at the
But then you throw Tim Burton on the top of that, and you can kiss classic Disney goodbye.
Yeah, not really.
He's going to stick with the original plot. There's going to be some weird stuff on there that kids are just going to be freaked out by, and at the same time, true diehard Tim Burton fans are going to love it, and he'll be fine. You know, that's not even going to be like an issue. That film's going to clean up, I'm sure.
I'm sure it will. I mean, I really like Sweeney Todd too. I don't know if you ever saw Sweeney Todd.
No,
nope. I thought that.
Like I said, I'm not a big Burton fan, and I don't like musicals. So
aww.
There's two for me right there in one shot.
But for me, I'm not a big Tim Burton fan, but I like musicals, and so I watched it and. I thought it was pretty cool. Did you see that, Ian?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I don't really like musical levels, but no, I'm still looking at it. It has a visual flair that I don't see with anyone else. He seems to be able to do a shot really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe what I like about him. His cinematography is second to none.
That's true. Yeah, it definitely has a very unique style, and sometimes that's all you need to kind of separate yourself from the bunch.
That and not use Johnny Depp all the time.
And his girlfriend. Elena Baum. Carter, yeah. He uses a lot of the same people.
But it's cool. I mean, he, like you, Ian, you just said, the cinematography, he's got a great view. I just can't sink my teeth into just about anything that he's done. They're just...
Yeah, sucks sometimes.
So oddly over the top.
Yeah. When someone has
Edward Scissorhands was probably one of the worst films I've ever seen. I could not get into it. It was just sad and
really
miserable and just like, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
whenever
you have a film, whenever you have a director or someone who has a very unique style, you're going to have people who like it and people who don't. I mean, just like with Quentin Tarantino. I know people who don't like Quentin Tarantino films because he has a very unique style. And so that's something where you're going to have the kind of the people liking it and people not liking it.
No, it's true. And most directors do. I mean, that's why they're hired for who they are, because they have these unique styles. But
right.
I don't know. That's just one that he goes over the top.
I think we can all agree that Michael Bay is the greatest director of all time.
He's so great. That
awesome.
I don't want to see Transformers 2 just because he's so good that, you know, I got to have some boundaries of excitement.
Awesome. It was a great commercial with him for Verizon, where he's just saying how everything's all, oh, it's so hilarious. Awesome cat.
Everything's like just buying, awesome buying.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, awesome cat, awesome house. But it's funny. I think we'll kind of end with our main topics with Star Trek. So I know that, I think it was Ian, you're the one that posted the article about all the different box sets that are coming out?
Yeah, I did post the article, yeah. You had sent me a link, and I had a look at it and thought, yeah, it's definitely worth writing a story about. And, I wonder how many films get this many different options to buy. It's one thing I can't help but think while writing it. District 9, and even Transformers 2, you know, how many different box sets will you be able to buy them? And this is going to be not many, but I suppose with Star Trek, you've got this 30-odd year fan base that you can aim your packaging at, and some of the packaging is just amazing. What did you think of it yourself?
Yeah, and that's the one thing I noticed about it. I mean, like, you know, you can try to decide if you want to buy the Blu-ray, DVD, whatever, but what it really comes down to in terms of the differences and all these things seem to be the packaging. I mean, there's the one where you actually get that replica of the Enterprise. There's one where, like, the disc is actually inside the saucer. It's just – I thought it was really cool. I mean, I wonder how many people are actually going to buy multiple ones just because they're such big fans. But it's pretty cool. There's so many options. It kind of messes with your mind. You're like, crap, what do I do? but it's just, it's definitely interesting to see. I think there, you know, people really love Star Trek, but they're really going to be into buying multiple things or are wanting to have their own options. And so that's one of the things I think that the producers of, you know, the Paramount Home Entertainment and stuff like that, they know, you know, what the people want. So that's why there's the one, oh yeah, the one with the pins. You actually get the one with the actual pins that you put on your shirt or whatever. It's just so cool. Like, they have so many different things.
Go ahead.
So, no, I was going to say, and it seemed to me as well, looking at the box sets, that it wasn't necessarily Paramount that had made those box sets up. Right. Usually, you like Terminator Salvation, if you want to buy a box set, you can get the T-600 skill, and that's it. Whereas there seemed to be a lot of different versions, and there was a couple of different, you know, Enterprise model versions, one made by Amazon, and I can't remember if it was Target or Best Buy or somebody that made the other one. And it's as if they've actually made their own packaging for it, which is, I thought, really interesting.
Yeah, I think that, they're only at Target and stuff like that. I mean, it could be something where they're still working with one of the companies, but to get exclusive things. I mean, that's what you want to do. If you're Target, you want something that's exclusive.
But it happens. I mean, it happens with, you know, not a lot, but, you know, it when it does happen, it does happen. Because Cloverfield was different editions in 5 stores.
Mm-hmm.
The Dark Knight had different editions, whether it be a Batman mask or, you know, the tumbler and stuff like that. So they had all these different box sets that, so it's not getting to figure out which one are we going to sell. It's just, I'm going to sell you this version. I'm going to sell you that version.
Right.
And then have at it, and good luck to, you know, whoever gets the most sales. And that's all it really turns down to. So
it's just so hard to decide. Like, you know, like, I love Star Trek and I want to get it. I'm just trying to figure out, my God, which one should I get?
And you know what's probably going to happen? What? We're going to buy them all.
There you go. I don't think I'm money.
No. No, not right now. You don't. But maybe, you know,
slowly but surely,
stuff like that too. So, but then again, you take people like, you know, Up. Look at Up. They released 3 different versions in 1 box, and that was it.
I thought that was really cool.
That's amazingly brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not everybody has it. Not every. I personally would buy it because, one, I don't have the Blu-ray yet. But I want to. So there's my regular DVD, there's my Blu-ray, and I got the iPhone, so there's my digital copy. So that, you know, so it depends. It depends on how you're going to attack it, but at the same time, Up did enough money in the theaters that they could really care less what they're going to.
Well, it's DVD sales are still really important for movies, but I think the thing for me that I found really interesting about Up, to kind of, I think we talked a lot about Star Trek, but I almost see the way that Up did their packaging and stuff to be kind of the future of home film releases. I mean, I'm just looking at it right now on Amazon, and you can actually get it for like $20 on Amazon, where it's the digital copy, the DVD, and the Blu-ray. And because as we're making that transition, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about how we're going to skip Blu-ray altogether, kind of, and go straight to digital. But I mean, there's always going to be people who want hard disk versions of stuff. So I think that, you know, as you make that transition towards Blu-ray, and Blu-ray becomes more popular because the prices are just dropping like flies, you're going to see that where people still are going to want, you know, both, or they're going to want the transitionary thing. So, I mean, that's where I think you're going to see a lot more doing that, because obviously they can do it for a good price.
No, they could do it, yeah. No one's going to say, I'm skipping past Blu-ray.
Right.
You know, Blu-ray itself is only getting better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna not buy a CD because I can get it on iTunes for cheaper. I want my CD. You know, when you collect something, you can't digitally collect something. Sorry, okay. That's just not gonna happen. You want it physically in your possession. DVD collectors are not gonna bypass. DVD collectors have Blu-rays pretty much now. You're not gonna bypass it. You're gonna buy it. So the fact that they're giving you all 3 options, that's brilliant. You've got, you know, three birds in one stone. So
yeah, I really think that the you're right, because people, I mean, it's almost like a status kind of thing where people like to put it on their shelves and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a big deal like that. I mean, for right now, I look at digital copies as being like an alternative, like you said, your iPhone or you know, or things like that, where you know you want, maybe you don't have your DVD nearby or whatever, so you have an option.
Yeah, and the digital copy is going to go away. I mean, I can go out and buy a CD now,
mm-hmm.
and download it and rip it and put it in my iPhone, and I'm mm-hmm. done.
Right.
I got, you know, two things at once. And that's going to be the same thing with the digital copy. You're not going to sit there and get two discs. You're going to be able to get the digital copy on your, you know, next available HD disc and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
It's, yeah, no one's going to get rid of the disc.
Yeah, I think the only way that even comes remotely close to doing that is if you start finding ways for people to be able to download digital copies of movies where there's still all those extra features.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the things with Blu-ray, especially some of the things we've been hearing about now, even with like the Star Trek, and I think the District 9 one even had some things where it's more dynamic extra features. Because the Blu-ray can hold so much, they can do so much more. You know, you're able to get some really interesting special features now. It's not just behind the scenes and like a gallery of pictures, you know, it's like actual really interactive stuff, or you know, really more in-depth things. There's that thing for Watchmen where like you could click on things, or like the guy, he would talk to you about, he'd break down scenes for you,
right? Exactly. Well, and now they're doing the whole thing too, and you know, it's with District 9 is you're going to be able to click on stuff, and you're going to be able to interact through your Facebook, and you're going to be able to interact online while you're watching them. You're not going to get that if you bitch, you know, your disc. That's all there. So,
yeah.
No, then there's no way that Blu-ray is going to be stepped on for a long, long time.
Yeah, I think this would be a good transitionary way to do it, because I don't think they did that with VHS to DVD. They just kind of, like, did it both, and then, like, they eventually just got rid of VHS.
Yeah, I think with the fact that you went from – the only big selling feature was that you had special features now when you went from VHS to DVD. And even now that regular DVDs have crap for special features on them. You know, you go to Blockbuster, you rent a video, your Blockbuster video is the basic it could possibly be. There's nothing involved in it. There's nothing.
Yeah, nowadays they're kind of stripping them down because they want to make them cheaper. But that's the thing with Blu-ray, is that they're going to be able to do that much more. I mean, the quality of the DVD, obviously, the quality of the movie obviously is going to be better, but the special features are going to be better. And so,
But if you figure you got HD disc, you know, that's even more. They're currently working on some disgusting, you know, compression for DVDs that will allow you to probably view the entire production of the film.
Wow.
You know, so.
It's just amazing to see what they're doing. But yeah, you're right. They're always going to want hard copies. It's nice to have that digital copy as like an extra feature.
Yeah.
Because you can always find ways to make digital copies yourself. But if they give it to you, it makes it even easier. But to think that they're going to get rid of it altogether. There are people who are really, you know, the wireless community where they're really just loving all these, you know, not having to have DVDs or any kind of tethers. You know, there's those kind of people.
They don't compare to collectors, though.
No, right. And those are the people that you're really trying to market to, which is why you see these Star Trek things where you have, like, you know, six or seven different box sets, because people like to collect this stuff, especially for a movie that's so good and so iconic as Star Trek. I just wish that with the District 9 one, you could get like a fake arm or something. That'd be funny.
It'll be out.
Yeah, no, I don't find that they're not going to get rid of Blu-ray anytime soon. Not even because of what you're saying, but like storage-wise, etc. as well, and speed the internet for a proper 1080p picture. Not that most of us have 1080p TVs, but for a proper 1080p picture, you'll need the Blu-ray because it's like 40 gigs worth of information, whereas the 720p, which is the one that you can download on like Xbox Live, that's like 6.4 gigabytes. So it's just even just a matter of that as well. But like with the digital copies and things like that, it's like, you know, when you had the CDs and then you had MP3 players and you could put your music onto an MP3 player, really, really good for the fact that you could go to your house and think, crap, I wanted to listen to that U2 album, but I left it in the house. Oh, no, wait, it's in my library on my iPod.
Right.
But, you know, with digital copies, it's going to be the same, but I don't see digital copies replacing hard copies.
Digital copy is only as good as your, whatever it be, your iPhone or your PSPs or whatever, you know, they can be used on. the fact that I can sit here and if I, you know, with a Blu-ray, I can watch it in 7:1 surround sound.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting that on digital copy.
Right.
Get it.
You have to compress it and stuff, yeah. Same exactly. HD stuff. And, yeah. And it gets expensive even if you try to do real HD on digital copies or the download time. There's a lot of issues there. And I think that one of the interesting points is that with music, the reason why music has pretty much gone all digital is because you don't have the collectors like you do with DVDs.
Right.
With, you know, maybe if we're still using, you know, records or something, you would. But with just CDs, no one really cares unless you make some really awesome CD set or something. And then also the fact that your music, you know, how often do you really just kind of randomly watch a movie while you're out? You know, it's not often, but your music,
right.
Music people listen to all the time, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people listen to it when they're, you know, when they're working, when they're running, you know. You don't do that with a movie.
And nowadays you can rent them on iTunes anyway, so why buy it? If you're going on, a trip on a plane, you rent
right.
it, you watch it, you're done.
Right. And they, you can even go on Hulu and watch free ones. You know?
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, I mean, there's a lot of options there. So with music, I mean, that's something where people like to take that with them almost everywhere because you never know when you're going to want to listen to music because
yeah.
you don't have to use your eyes. That's
yeah.
simple. But, so yeah, that's.
Yeah, now that you got your.
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, now that you got your Blu-ray players like that, you know, you can connect to the internet as well,
that's
then
true.
it's going to be a simple case of, it's like when you've got a game and it needs a fix, you just download a patch, and it'll be exactly the same for Blu-rays now as well. You know, they'll maybe update, well, they're doing that with District 9, sure enough, and they'll be updating your IMDb things so you can find out what the actor's doing next and things like that. So, will a digital copy do that? Possibly, but, you know, there's still a place for the hard copy, still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's the way the technology is, I mean, they're going to make it so that And they want it to be. I mean, there's more money to be made in selling physical items than there is in selling digital items. So if they can, they're going to find a way to keep hard copies around. Because
mm-hmm.
there's just more money in that. You know, you get more jobs from manufacturing and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's more money to be made in actually making a physical copy of something than it is distributing it digitally. It's just that simple. So if the companies can do it, they're going to do it. They're going to make sure. Which is why you see a lot of these attempts to do like copyright stuff on them. I think we got pretty much a good amount of stuff. Is there anything else you guys think we should talk about?
No, not at the moment.
No.
I think we covered some good stuff. So, yes, we want to let people know that hopefully this week I got to find out some details. We're going to have our Star Trek contest. There's they're doing a they have a fan, what's it called? It's like an official companion book. Which has like pictures and things like that.
Yeah, it's basically the art of the movie.
Right. Seems like it's really cool. And so they're gonna have three copies of those. So we'll be giving those out. We'll give you details on how that contest is gonna work out. So stay tuned for that. We'll always have more stuff. We're gonna give out some more T-shirts. I think in the next couple of weeks. You know, Christmas is coming up. We're trying to help people out. I'm looking at some other options. So we're gonna have a lot of contests. Hopefully, as Christmas comes around. So definitely everyone stay tuned to the site. Follow us on Twitter. We have our Twitter account, which is just @MovieViral. Our YouTube account even, youtube.com/MovieViral. We just uploaded the new Sherlock Holmes trailer because we just added the page to our website. So check.
Really looks much better than the original trailers.
Yeah, it's an international trailer, and it's pretty amazing. It's like 2.5 minutes, and it's a lot of good stuff in there. And it makes the movie look even better than I thought it was going to be. So. Definitely check that out. Like I said, we have our page, which gives you a little bit into the viral and the information on the film. So check all that out. You can download this podcast on iTunes, so subscribe to us, please. And keep checking back for more viral news. I want to thank Ian and Scott for being with me. So we'll talk again some other time. And that's it. Thanks.